Please silence all electronic devices.
This is what's on their website. Quote, Negroes were the most spoiled domestics in the world.
I think it's a bad idea. I don't think people should spend their money that way, but it would be their choice, and it wouldn't be the government using its particular power and its desire to get more revenue from folks doing this, which I think is a bad public policy.
I actually agree with a lot of what Mitch has said.
Any further discussion or debate?
Hello again. This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. It is Friday, December 6th, 2019. Glad to have you along as we take a shot at reviewing another week in North Carolina politics. Mitch Kokai, part of the conversation today. He, of course, from the conservative John Locke Foundation, and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi, guys.
Good afternoon.
Let's begin with the latest chapter in the saga over Silent Sam, the Confederate statue erected on the UNC Chapel Hill campus, ripped down to the ground a year ago, August. In a Thanksgiving Eve news dump, we learned that UNC system officials have entered into a deal with the North Carolina chapter of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. Included in the deal is $2.5 million, as well as possession of the toppled symbol of the Jim Crow South. School officials from the University of the People say this will end the saga. Unsurprisingly, plenty of outcry. It is unclear if this agreement is even legal. Guys, take it away.
Well, it's just bizarre in many respects. I mean, I don't think anyone realistically thought that Silent Sam was going to go back up anywhere on the UNC campus. But the question was, what was going to happen to it? I don't think that there was a real strong inclination among all except maybe a couple of legislators and a couple of members of the Board of Governors to even have it anywhere near the university campus anymore. So what to do with it? The fact that they would come up with some sort of arrangement with a group like the Sons of the Confederate Veterans, not terribly surprising, but the way it came out, the way it was done, the back and forth, and the fact that it was all released after sort of secret negotiations left a lot of people scratching their heads, even people who might think that giving the statue to that group and making sure it's nowhere near a university campus is a good thing. I think if they looked at how it came about, they had to think this doesn't really pass the smell test.
Yeah, I agree. Mitch was mentioning they negotiated it. We don't know who they were. We don't know if it was the board, or whether they delegated this to some committee. It's not clear whether they had a vote on that. It was signed by the chair of the board 4 days before the agreement was actually reached. The lawsuit that was supposedly being settled was not filed until after the settlement was reached. And the people who were behind the lawsuit admitted in their own letter that the lawsuit was completely without merit, that they had no standing whatsoever to bring it. They thought that there was not a chance in the world that they could actually sue successfully. So it's just... And then to top it all off, the idea of we're giving $2.5 million of what is essentially public funds to a group that propagates the worst kind of hate speech and racist attitudes and stuff on their website that you just wouldn't believe. Boy, it's not surprising that a lot of people think this was a really terrible outcome.
Is this state funding of a hate group?
Good question. I have not looked enough into the Sons of the Confederate Veterans to have the strong anti-opinion that Rob does, because there are some groups that are basically, supporting your family's heritage and that sort of thing. And I don't have – I'm not from the South, do not know how that feels. I'm from the state that produced the generals that tended to destroy the South, being Ohio. But having this money, even though it's not taxpayer funding, it certainly is funding that could be available for public uses, and that is a concern.
Yeah, and they are. This group really is pushing an ahistorical view of history, of the Civil War. This is what's on their website. This is reported by R. Joe Killian this week. It features a 1929 pamphlet called A Confederate Catechism. The tract explains that the war was not caused by slavery, but by the, quote, vindictive, intemperate anti-slavery movement, and says, quote, Negroes were the most spoiled domestics in the world. It credits Southerners with transforming slaves and the enslaved from, quote, African savages and cannibals into upstanding Christians. This is in a 1929 document that is featured on the website of this organization that we're giving $2.5 million to.
Candidate filing for the 2020 elections began on Monday. That was the same day a panel of three state judges ruled that newly drawn congressional districts are good to go next year. So far, we've seen numerous retirements, a challenger back down, and some judicial races fall into what seems like a sensible order. What has stood out to you so far, Rob?
Well, I think we need to reiterate that this approval of the congressional map was a mistake. I really feel like the judges blinked. They allowed the clock to be run out on them. They essentially admitted that it was not a proper map, that it was not, they said, I think the terms of it's not perfect. It's not even close to perfect in truth. And so we're going to have another gerrymandered, rigged election in 2020. This is not a good solution, that this map that we're going to have. Now, if you want to look at who's running, I mean, I guess it is true that a couple of Republicans, we've got sort of this reality now that urban areas are not favorable to Republicans and generally rural areas are more favorable to Republicans. So George Holding and Mark Walker, who come from the Triad and from the Triangle, but who have had districts that sort of branched out into rural areas, are now on the endangered species list. And Walker's even perhaps been, I guess, rumored that he might even think about challenging Tom Tillis, who now we have Garland Tucker, who's dropped out of the Tillis race. But in general, I mean, I just still think it's a very unsatisfying result, but obviously it'll be a very interesting election year.
I would note that there have been rigged and or gerrymandered maps for a very long time in the state. What should the judges have done? Should they have brought in a special master? Should they have kicked it back over here?
I think that would have been the simple thing to do, bring in a special master. The master could have drawn the map. This notion that we, you know, that we somehow were going to running up against the clock, the master could have done it in a matter of days. I think that could have been, that was the better solution. And the notion that we couldn't delay the election, if that, you know, the congressional election, maybe it had to be pushed off to June. It's been done before. Life would have gone on and we could have had a fairer set of maps.
I think the judges did not go ahead and bring in the special master because, unlike in the case of the legislative elections, they really didn't have a trial on this. They had had a hearing and they suggested to the General Assembly, they didn't order anything, but they suggested to the General Assembly, look, it looks bad for this map for the same reason that the legislative maps got tossed. But it would have been hard for them to justify bringing in a special master without holding a lengthy trial with the experts from both sides spending hours on the bench looking at various maps and saying this map is better than that. So I think that they also pointed out that one of the problems that they had with this particular case was the fact that the people who filed it waited until September, not too long before the candidate filing was supposed to start, before they filed suit. They said, look, if you saw that this was an issue and that it was a big issue and we should address it, why didn't you file suit as soon as the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that federal courts weren't going to deal with this issue anymore? Why didn't you file in July? Why'd you wait till September? And I think that helped them with their argument that, look, we can't take the drastic step of throwing out a duly enacted map from the General Assembly at this stage in the game without holding a major lengthy trial. We can't hold a major lengthy trial. So we're going to look at the process that was used and say it comported with what we asked them to do. And let's just go ahead and have people vote.
State Court of Appeals ruled in favor of Republican lawmakers in a dispute with the Democratic governor this week. A panel of three state judges unanimously agreed that legislators can appropriate how federal block grant money is spent. Roy Cooper had sued, claiming that the General Assembly had usurped his constitutional authority. An interesting component of this, and there are several, is the judge who wrote the opinion is a Democrat and is running for a seat on the state Supreme Court next year. What do you take away from the ruling?
Well, a lot of things. I mean, there's an ongoing battle, obviously, between Governor Cooper and the legislature ever since the Cooper administration started. I mean, even before he took office, Republicans were trying to take away some of his powers. We've had a series, an ongoing, probably permanent series of court cases trying to decide who has what powers. I mean, I think it's sort of symptomatic of the dysfunction that we have right now in North Carolina government that we have to have this. I think in an ideal world, these are the kinds of things that the governor and the legislature would work out. It, just like the rest of the budget, it should have been worked out. So I'm not particularly surprised that the governor would take a broader view of what his powers are than the legislature was. And I'm not surprised that a judge, it shows that judges aren't robots. I mean, this particular judge ruled the way that they thought that the Constitution dictated, and the whole panel did. So it doesn't surprise me. I think it's we shouldn't be surprised that a Democratic judge rules against a Democratic governor. That's party ought not to matter in such matters as this.
The specifics for those who haven't followed it is that Governor Cooper sued, saying that the General Assembly could not change his recommended budget when it comes to the use of federal block grant money.
Right.
And the General Assembly responded, wait a minute, we are the branch that deals with money and sets a budget. You can't force us to appropriate money the way you want it to be appropriated. A trial court judge, initially another Democrat, had ruled in favor of the General Assembly. And this was a unanimous three-judge panel that agreed and affirmed the trial court judge. And as we mentioned, Lucy Inman is the judge who wrote that opinion. She is a registered Democrat who will be running for state Supreme Court. And in very strong words said, look, Governor Cooper, you put forward no arguments to support this. The Constitution is clear that the General Assembly is in charge of the money that's flowing into the state treasury. Now, one interesting other piece of this in the reaction, as you might expect, the General Assembly crowed about this ruling. And one of the things that they mentioned in their news release was, this is the type of thing that we've been dealing with in the debate about that contingency fund set up on the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, that Cooper does not have the power to be able to set up a fund and control it. And so I thought it was interesting that even though the court case did not deal with that issue, they loop back to one of their favorite recent issues, which is Governor Cooper, yeah. Atlantic Coast Pipeline, and what they refer to as a slush fund.
And I presume Cooper will continue to remind them of all the times he's won in the court cases that have gone back and forth over the last couple of years, in which they tried to usurp his power, and the court said, no, you're going too far. That's a constitutional duty of the governor. This is an ongoing ebb and flow between the two branches, it would seem.
Works well with the holiday season, does it not? Finally, All I Want for Christmas is online scratch-off tickets. While online wagering might not be available for this holiday, the State Lottery Commission did move a step closer to making it legal earlier this week. They say it's time to advance a new arm of the state education lottery, and it would generate an estimated $80 million in annual revenue. However, opponents warn that these games are more addictive than traditional scratch-off tickets and that they may in fact run very much counter to efforts that have been made in recent years by the legislature to do away with online poker and video sweepstakes. Do either of you see a clear benefit in making these games legal?
In making
the online scratch-off lottery. Tickets, online lottery, legal, permissible, available throughout the state?
Well, the issue for us when we've looked at this is, if you're going to allow gambling in the state, which is basically what happened when the lottery came in, every other gambling except on the Cherokee Reservation was illegal. If you're going to make it legal, why would there be a state monopoly? You can have the argument about gambling not being legal. Okay, if that's what the stance is going to be, fine. But if it's going to be legal, why does the state have the monopoly? Why is the lottery the only gambling that's going to be sanctioned? That's issue number one. Then, and I'm sure Rob will bring this up and probably have more detail on it, the lottery preys on the poor. I mean, it's clear. All of the information that comes out year after year about who plays the lottery and where, it's always in the poorest counties. It's the people who are least likely to be the ones who are just doing it for fun, and it's kind of a recreational thing, the way you'd spend your money, like going to a concert or going to a baseball game, you spend some money on lottery tickets. No, these are the people, for the most part, who are poorer, who think, I'm going to get out of poverty by winning the lottery, and nothing within the way the lottery is set up discourages them from thinking that might be a possibility.
So you don't see any clear benefit into further expanding here? Or?
Yeah, no benefit for the larger issue of having the state being the only provider of legalized gambling. If you're going to say
But what if it was privatized online scratch-off tickets? Would you be okay with that?
If it's a private option and it's just going to be taxed like a normal business, I think it's a bad idea. I don't think people should spend their money that way, but it would be their choice, and it wouldn't be the government using its particular power and its desire to get more revenue from folks doing this, which I think is a bad public policy.
I actually agree with a lot of what Mitch has said. First of all, I think it's the worst idea that's come down the road in a long time. I think maybe we should just put the terminals right in the schools. It's the education lottery. We just teach the kids how to do online gambling right while they're in classes.
Could be a math lesson in there.
Yeah, exactly. We've got the fact that these sweepstakes parlors that we keep trying to, you know, put out of business for their illegal gambling. They're going to love this kind of thing. They're going to be getting right in the business of it. They'll start opening terminals and say, well, you can come check your email in our sweepstakes parlor here and, you know, drink and play the lottery all day. I mean, the limits, this is even more ridiculous. They talk about lottery officials have proposed limiting people to only $505 a day, $2,000 a week, or $4,000 a month in their accounts. Really? Really? That's what we're going to do? We're going to have people spending thousands of dollars? It's just remarkable. And to Mitch's point, I think he makes an excellent point, actually, about the whole idea of the government being involved with it. When this is, for so many people in our society now, this is the only time or one of the most visible times in which they interact with their government. And they're interacting with their government over what is clearly a scam. They're being taken every day. They're being ripped off by their government. That breeds distrust in our government. It sends the absolute wrong message. We can have a debate about whether gambling should be legalized, but the idea of the government pushing a scam on you, pushing a plan that's designed to take your money away is just, God, it's just the worst thing I can imagine for our government to be involved with. And this is just about as terrible as I can imagine of a scheme.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Mitch Kokai is senior policy analyst at the John Locke Foundation. Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
Jeff.
Let your heart be light.
The WUNC Politics Podcast lands for you twice a week. Feel free to leave us a rating or review. Tell a neighbor, colleague, friend, somebody about the pod if you are enjoying it. And if you've got suggestions or questions for us, don't hesitate to pass them along. I'm on Twitter at J_TIBS. If you don't download the program already, please consider doing that. Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play. And as always, thanks for tuning in. For Mitch and Rob, I'm Jeff. Enjoy your weekend.
Here we are as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us. Through the years we all will be together, if the fates allow.